Just Love on the Catholic Channel,
Sirius XM 129.
The Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129 presents Just Love with your host, Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, Executive Director of Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of New York.
Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, and I thank you for joining us this week on our weekly conversation about what's going on in the world through the perspective of our Catholic social teaching. As usual, Tom Dobbins has rounded up for us a couple of really good guests to help us understand a little bit more what's going on in the world. We're coming up on Veterans Day, and so we're going to talk a little bit about services to veterans with the CEO of Catholic Charities in Flint, Michigan. And then a little bit later on in the show, we're going to try to talk a little bit about how do we get along better? How do we kind of cooperate with each other and not, you know, yell at each other? How do we talk about things that are difficult even when we disagree on them? So, Tom, how's the fall going for you?
Oh, fall's going great, Monsignor. Fall is a very, I like the fall. I mean, and I like the period of time that we're in because for me, like, I always think of this as like a marathon holiday season. You know, it starts with Halloween and then we move into all the Saints celebrations. Then we move up to Thanksgiving, which I love. Then we move up to Advent, Christmas, New Year's. It's just great. And then after that, everything falls apart because then I think we get into those winter doldrums and it's just awful. But at least for now, everything's beautiful, festive. So I love this time of year.
Okay. You know what? I did go outside of New York City, but when I went, the foliage was not super great.
Oh, really?
Okay. No, it wasn't super great. So I don't know if it's still, is it still kind of bright or is it the season over and or is it gone or what?
I think we're in the midst, like, you know, I mean, our season obviously starts later than upstate. I haven't actually been upstate. I mean, unless you consider lower Westchester where my family lives upstate.
Yeah, Tom, forget about it. You know, I mean,
which really isn't upstate. It's like right across from the Bronx. So that's really not upstate.
I mean, for our listeners across the country, you probably know this, but we might as well fess up that more than every now and then, we who live in New York City, we kind of think everything outside is foreign and alien and all of those type of things. And I'll tell you a little, I mean, in New York State, for our listeners throughout the country, New York State is, it's a relatively large state. I mean, it's not Texas, it's not Alaska, it's not California, but it is a relatively large state. And it is one of the most beautiful states.
Yeah,
and I'm not being overly prejudiced. It basically, it's got New York City, which everybody knows, which is incredibly urban, but it also has the Adirondacks and the Catskills, which are very, very picturesque. They're mountainesque. And it's got a lot of produce. There's a lot of farming that occurs in New York State. So it's very, very diverse. And so when you get a little bit outside of New York City, if you can kind of readjust yourselves from concrete and skyscrapers and stuff like that, there's just some very, very beautiful stuff that is there if you kind of take the time to view it and to kind of try to learn more about it and take the time to get there. And I will say, you know, you can do it even with public transportation because you can take the train along the Hudson River, which is very, very beautiful, beautiful ride. So anyway, Tom, I'm glad you like it. I may try to take a little bit of a ride before and see if I can catch some of the foliage.
Oh, yeah.
Before it ends. So it is Veterans Day coming up. So do you know why Veterans Day is celebrated when it is?
I think, and I'm not 100% sure, but I think it has to do with the Armistice Day after the First World War.
You are 100% right, but
There you go.
now tell our listeners how it all fits together.
I believe that, and I could be getting a little bit off
No,
on this one, Monsieur.
you're getting there. Come
All
on,
right, okay.
have the courage of your conviction.
I
Because
think
there's no
it.
penalty if you get it wrong.
That's true. I would say I think, except that all the listeners across the country will know I got it wrong. But other than that, I was going to say, but I think it has to do. Was it? And this is where I could be getting messed up. Because I get sometimes Memorial Day messed up with this, that it had to do a little bit with the veterans would wear poppies on their
No,
lapels. Okay. All right. Okay. Okay.
it is the 11th day of the 11th
Ah,
month of
okay.
the 11th hour.
Okay. Very good. Okay.
That's when the armistice was set, which is why we do it on 11/11, November
Oh, okay.
11th,
Okay.
because it's 11th day, 11th month,
Ah.
11th hour.
I
So
like that
that's how it
alliteration.
came. That's how it came to me. You did get it mixed up. Poppies go with Memorial Day.
Memorial Day.
And I
Okay,
don't
that's okay.
remember the origin of that. So
Okay.
anyway, so Tom, let's go to our first guest. Katie Baxter is the Chief Executive Officer of Catholic Charities of Flint, Michigan. And we're going to speak to her about some of the services that Catholic Charities is doing for veterans. Katie, thanks for taking the time to be with us on Just Love.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great. So our listeners hear your voice. They can't see you. Give them a little bit of a background of how you got to your current position. How'd you wind up being the CEO of Catholic Charities in Flint, Michigan?
Sure. Thank you very much, Monsignor Sullivan. I was raised by a wonderful family. I'm the baby of 14, a wonderful Catholic family. My parents went to Catholic grade school all the way through universities and raised us all. And I grew up and was kind of drawn to the helping profession. So I wanted to be a social worker. I actually wanted to be a marriage and family counselor originally. I went to Michigan State University and got both of my degrees in social work, MSW in social work, and went into the field.
So
And
most
so I
importantly, Katie, I got to interrupt you. You did lose to Michigan a couple of weeks ago, right?
Yes, we did.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, but
All
let me just tell you
right.
that five of my children, of our seven children, my husband and I are either graduates or attending University of Michigan. So I have a loyalty there too.
Okay, and you let them go?
Yes,
Okay.
I
But I bet you wouldn't have let them go to Ohio State.
That's right. That's true.
Okay.
So I was really drawn to the helping profession and wanted to be a social worker. I married my wonderful husband and he converted to the Catholic faith and we raised our seven children. Our oldest is turning 28 next week and our youngest is 11. And so I worked as a social worker of the field, mostly in Flint, in the Flint community where there's a lot of need. And I worked as a substance abuse therapist and a mental health counselor. Then I got into administration and program development and that kind of thing. I eventually was a senior clinical director at Genesee Health System for a number of years, and I really enjoyed that work. But I was really drawn to being part of an organization that was really aligned with Catholic social teachings. And so I joined Catholic Charities of Shiawassee Genesee Counties in October of 2022.
Wow, that is great. Let me see if I can do it. Catholic Charities of Shiawassee and Jenison County. How close did I come?
Very good.
Good.
That's good.
That is great. So, I almost got completely distracted when you said you were one of 14.
Yes.
So, I am one of one.
One of one. That's incredible.
One of one. And I mean, how do you do it? I mean, excuse me, where did you fit in?
What's that? I'm number 14. I'm number 14.
Wow, you were the last one. So, wow, that and what's the age span difference?
About 22 years, I think.
Wow.
So yeah, big age span, and my parents were so devoted to the faith. My mother was a saint, I'm sure of it. She hasn't been canonized, but maybe one day. And my father was a World War II veteran, a Marine in World War II, part of the Greatest Generation.
As was my dad. My dad was that too. But when he came back, he and my mom, well, you know why I'm an only child? Because after they had me, they said, the world just can't take another one like him. He's a troublemaker enough. We're not gonna put another one on the world to take care of him. So anyway, thank you so much, Katie. Now, excuse me, I do have a cold, so I apologize to our listeners for my cold. So please forgive me for coughing every now and then. Katie, would you, so tell us, it's Veterans Day, and tell us a little bit about the work that Catholic Charities in Flint is doing to support veterans.
Yes, well, we have a wonderful program. It's called Sacred Heart Veteran Village. And the program is the first of its kind in Michigan and really in the United States, because it's a very unique program. But I'll just say that, you know, we're a faith-based nonprofit, of course, and we serve lots of folks. We serve about 300 meals a day in the city of Flint between two soup kitchens, and we do lots of other kinds of things, showers and personal needs items and laundry, etc. We also operate a warming center for the last 16 years. And we see people coming in need of housing and what the continued crisis is with a lack of affordable housing. And many, many people are homeless. And we found that veterans are homeless or coming to our warming center. We see veterans under bridges and not, you know, living in cars and so forth. And we wanted to use our property. We had the old Sacred Heart Church was no longer there, but we own that property and we wanted to use it in an innovative way. My predecessor, Vicki Schultz, said, what about the tiny home concept? What about having tiny homes? And so we really rallied around that and we said, okay, there's lots of people who could benefit from the support, but we know we have veterans and we all agree that veterans shouldn't be homeless after serving our country. So we put our energy and time into that. This program is very unique because it involves a 5,000 square foot veteran resource center, which has a variety of supports in place. We just had a ribbon cutting and we're just opening this month. So the services to veterans include comprehensive case management and behavioral health services, substance use disorder, mental health counseling, other health and wellness, exercise, financial planning, budgeting, employment services, entitlements, all of those kinds of things to help veterans get back on their feet. It is a transitional veterans program. So the idea is that veterans live in the bungalows, we call them, 300 to 500 square feet, while they get back on their feet and save money to live independently. And the idea is that this could be a promising practice for other organizations to help other vulnerable populations, because what we find about people who are experiencing homelessness, they come with a lot of challenges and they need more than just a place to live. They need those wraparound services to really help them stabilize and feel supported and get healthy and live on their own.
We're speaking with Katie Baxter, who is the Chief Executive Officer of Catholic Charities of Flint, Michigan. So I thought I heard you say two numbers. You mentioned something about 5,000 square feet and then 300. Make me a little smarter on that.
Okay. So we have a veteran resource center in the village, and that's where all the services take place.
Okay.
There, it's 5,000 square feet, and it's a half-court basketball It's a multi-purpose room. So the
Right.
veterans can play basketball and do exercise things, but also it's a training room and a meeting room for meals and gatherings and so forth. And there's also several other rooms, individual rooms, therapy rooms, and
Okay.
large meeting rooms and things like that. As far as the bungalows, we only have four. We're starting out slowly at this time. This is a program that is really a community-based program and is privately funded. So we're reaching out to our donors and supporters to continue to make the dream a reality. Currently, we have four homes, and the intention is to have 26 bungalows. There will be eight that are 300 square feet, and those are like super ADA, where wheelchairs and things can enter. If we do have veterans who are in wheelchairs or other
Right.
mobility challenges. And then the other 18 are 500 square foot, one bedroom bungalows.
So you have four and you kind of gonna try to build to 32.
To a total of 26.
26. Okay. How long you think it's gonna take you to get there?
Well, with a lot of prayer and a lot of hard work and help from goodwilled citizens and organizations who want to help, we're hoping, reasonably within the next year or so
Okay.
would to be able to complete the whole village. But
So,
it is a large project.
well, that it is a wonderful project, and I always am intrigued by square feet. Tom, how many square feet is your studio apartment in Manhattan?
My apartment's probably maybe 325. So it's
Wow.
about the same. About the same. Yeah, it's like a tiny,
Right.
mine's like a tiny home, except it's an apartment.
Right.
But it's like a
Wow, that's
tiny home.
huge.
So, how did you find the veterans who are your first four residents?
Yes, well, the veterans are in the process of being selected and moving in, hopefully this next month. We just had a ribbon cutting for the Veteran Resource Center. And we are hopeful that they move in November, December. We're still finalizing on the bungalows.
Right.
In construction, it's always amazing how many delays and challenges with permitting and all of those other things.
Yeah.
But we do have veterans who are interested, and there's application process where they
Right.
apply, and we have a roundtable review committee that consists of veterans and other individuals who are deciding who are the most appropriate individuals to veterans to come into the home. It is for both male and females. They are single residence bungalows, so it's not for a family. They are
Right.
small, we are open to receiving both men and women veterans.
Right.
And what we found is that we really want to help fill in the gaps because how we define homelessness, we're not using like a HUD criteria for homelessness because that requires somebody is living only in a place not meant for habitation. So if
Right.
there's a veteran who is living with a family member and doesn't have their own place and they just can't get back on their feet for a number of reasons, they would be eligible for our program.
So,
We
Katie,
also, go
you
ahead.
also mentioned that it's transitional, correct?
Yes, it is.
What do you, I know you're just beginning. How long do you envision? 6 months, a year, 18 months? How long are you kind of projecting?
Yes, we say about 18 months, 12 months to 24 months.
Right.
That allows the veterans to save some money and
Right.
really get stabilized, develop a social network, and get all their entitlements in place and be able to save some money so that they are ready to move out and into an apartment, but put a down payment on a house or an apartment or
Right.
something like that.
So what if some other people, whether they be in Catholic charities or other places in other parts of the country, said, "Hey, boy, that sounds like something which is really, really good." What advice would you give to us?
I would say that a partnership is so important and talk to others who are doing these kinds of projects because we really need to work together and not necessarily reinvent the wheel. So we are happy at Catholic Charities to share what we are learning. We intend to work with a university to help us gather outcomes so we can make this a promising
Well, it
practice.
better be Michigan State.
Actually, it is.
Ah! That's great.
Yes.
Excuse me. Excuse me. If somebody said, okay, how much does it cost you to build one of those 300 or 500 square feet bungalows?
Well, I would say it's about 80,000, but if you take all the groundwork and all of that, it's over 100,000.
Right.
That's what we've had now. When we did start on this project, this has been a dream for, I want to say, close to 5 years.
Wow.
So it's been a long-term thing. The cost of lumber and everything else was much lower, so those prices have gone up. So
Right.
the whole project is really a $5 million project. Our 5,000 square foot bungalow, I
Right.
mean resource center, and our 26 bungalows is a $5 million project.
Wow. Wow. I know you mentioned you don't need to follow the HUD guidelines. You mentioned the private money. Is there any public government money involved in the project?
That we are very grateful to receive some dollars from the city of Flint,
Right.
like ARPA dollars. So the city of Flint's been a great support. They see the value. Our mayor recognizes that there's a need in the community, and this is a wonderful program. So they have been supportive in that way. Other partners are our foundations. Our local foundations have been great supports, and we have other private donors and just individuals, Knights of Columbus and lots of other organizations who have stepped up and said, many veterans groups, private citizens, as well as veterans groups have wanted to be a part of that, but we still need help. So we are still
Right.
raising money at this time.
So, Katie, let me ask you a broader question, which you began in the meeting with. I couldn't agree with you more that, somebody who has served their country in the military shouldn't be homeless. And yet they are. And so I guess I'm asking from like a broader policy point of view, what went wrong? I mean, why? I mean, and I'll just throw out things. There's a Veterans Administration, there are veterans hospitals. What went wrong?
Well, I think there's a lot of answers to that question, Monsignor.
Yeah.
One of the things that I wanted to talk about is that we are serving veterans that they don't necessarily all have to have an honorable discharge. We have heard lots of stories of veterans who, because of, let's say, a substance use disorder they develop or a mental health issue, made some bad choices or things like that, and they were not honorably discharged. We are working with veterans to help to see if they can appeal that process. And sometimes they're wanting to rehabilitate and have that really looked at. So that's one of the things. Not all, there are a lot of veterans who don't receive benefits, and it can be related to discharge status. Another thing is we've heard so many stories about just general red tape, where there was a confusion about benefits of what they were supposed to receive. The veteran was frustrated, angry about not receiving what they needed to receive and didn't
Right.
follow through or didn't have the resources to do that. And they're not getting the benefits that they're supposed to get.
Katie, you are a licensed social worker. And we hear a lot, I'm not, but we hear a lot about post-traumatic stress syndrome, and oftentimes we hear it related to those who have been in the military. Can you share with our listeners a little bit of kind of understanding of what that is about?
Yes, it's more common than you would think, post-traumatic stress disorder. So I've talked with a lot of veterans through this process, and what they've told me is that the military was really good at teaching me how to serve and be a soldier or work in the military, but wasn't so good at when sending me home how to deal with everything I had been through. And so I think the military is working at that and more aware now and trying to address that. But when people experience severe trauma, it affects their ability to function. People have nightmares and it affects their ability to leave in public and go certain places. It affects how they have social relationships. Oftentimes they turn to alcohol or drug use. There's a lot of things like that that occur in that process that make them not able to function in a regular job or setting after they come back from the military.
You know, I'll share with you something about my dad. And I think you mentioned that your dad was in the World War II. So was my dad. And, you know, I know there are some veterans who really talk a lot about their experience. They found camaraderie, all of those things. My dad never spoke about it. And, you know, when you asked him, he said, it was awful. It was whatever. And nope, I don't want to talk about it. And, you know, every now and then, if another veteran was there, he wouldn't hide. But, and in those days, I don't even think we had that term then. You know, you just sucked it up and you kind of went on with life. But he does tell one story about when he was walking home. It may have been even walking home from church, but walking home in the neighborhood that he lived in, it began to hail. And the hail was hitting the tin roofs of houses. He thought it was shelling. And he just ran all the way home because it brought back such really problematic things. And so what you're talking about, I think, is very, very real.
It is very real. And, you know, the brain, it is neuroscience. The brain remembers. And so when things happen, it can be sounds or smells or pictures or other things that trigger that. And the brain remembers the trauma. And so the old brain, part of the brain, is activated. And so our frontal lobe, you know, our executive functioning that tells us, hey, that's just hail, you know, I'm safe and all that, is less active. So the old brain responds like I'm in danger. So it's a real thing that people experience. And I would say my father was very proud of being a Marine and he fought in the war, but he also didn't talk about it much and certainly not to his daughters, very little. I am aware of the trauma he experienced. He went on to be a successful person and raise his family, but not without having some trauma from that, certainly.
Yeah. And again, we could talk about it in a way, but those in World War II who came back met a very, very supportive society. They're not so with Vietnam, not so with Iraq, not so with Afghanistan. And so I do think the social psychological setting has a tremendous impact on how one deals with it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it is unfortunate. And I think most of us are aware of that now on how important it is to support our veterans and to recognize that they are heroes and they served our country.
Share with our listeners one thing that kind of surprised you when you were going through this process. What came up that you said, "Ooh, I never expected that was going to be something"?
I would say the whole process about permits and all of the delays with construction. And one of the challenges with this project is both a blessing and a curse, is that we had so many partners. The students built the first four homes, the students in our local Genesee Career Institute in Grand Blanc High School. And so that was a wonderful labor of love. But the permitting was delayed. That didn't allow them to finish during the school. So then we had to get other contractors. There were just so many things. I think the value of having a lot of partners, we wanted this to be a community effort, is good, but it is a challenge when you have many people you have to bring together and you have to go through all that. So I think I was surprised about how many barriers we would have in that process.
Katie Baxter, social worker, Chief Executive Officer, Catholic Charities of Flint, Michigan, who is in the midst of this incredibly wonderful, creative project, Sacred Heart Veterans Village, to house veterans. And they are just at the beginning of it, but with an incredible, bright future. Katie, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us on Just Love. And more importantly, thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you so much for having me. I
Right.
appreciate it. God bless.
Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. This is our weekly conversation about what's going on in the world. Join us when we come back in just a moment on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.
Now let's get back to Just Love and your host, Monsignor Kevin Sullivan.
Welcome back to Just Love. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. We're approaching Veterans Day, and we just heard of an incredibly wonderful and creative project in Flint, Michigan, where Catholic Charities there is building a village of bungalows to house veterans who don't have good, stable housing. They're just getting it off the ground. And Tom, I like the idea that they're calling them bungalows.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's kind of,
yeah.
You know, that's kind of, I guess the word bungalow may have somewhat different connotations in different parts of the country. But it has kind of a nice connotation, at least in our part of the world, you know, like a little cozy, warm house, as mm-hmm. I think the way I think about it. So
I always think of Rockaway, Monsignor, like, yes, like beach bungalows.
Yes, yes. For listeners throughout the country, Rockaway is actually within New York City, but it's right at the tip of New York City, kind of hanging out in one of the inlets of the Atlantic Ocean.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's probably Rockaway Bay or something
that.
I don't know what it's exactly called. But it is a place where a number of people for many years, and still, they would go there. They might have a little bungalow, a little mm-hmm. house for the summer. They would go there and, you know, in going back many, many years, the tradition might have been that, like, the family would go there for the summer. And, like, the father, again, we're going back to when the father was the breadwinner and things
right.
like that, might have stayed closer to where he was working in Manhattan or someplace, and then go there on the weekends.
Exactly. That's exactly what used to happen. Exactly. That's what happened with my family.
Yeah. So anyway, so Tom, let's go to our next guest, Christopher Crawford, who is the Senior Director of Civic Strategies at Interfaith America. You know, we're shortly after Election Day. And so I'm delighted that we're going to have the opportunity to speak about what I consider to be a very, very critical topic. So, Christopher Crawford, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us on Just Love.
Thank you so much, Monsignor. It's an honor to be with you.
Great. So give our listeners, they can hear your voice, give them a little bit of the brief CV so they get a little sense of who they're hearing over their radio.
Sure. So I'm a cradle Catholic, but I tell people I've been different versions of a Catholic over time.
Okay.
I almost joined the Jesuits, almost became a Jesuit priest, but then met my wife. Professionally, I've worked in public life, in politics for most of my career. Started
so
my
let
career
me,
work-
look, Chris, let me stop you for a second.
Sure.
Where was the cradle? Which part of the world?
Nashua, New Hampshire.
And
so I grew up in a very political environment. New Hampshire's a small state with 400 state legislators and presidential candidates coming through.
But it's got Ben and Jerry's, right?
Yep,
it's got Ben
absolutely.
And Jerry's. Right.
And so I started my career working in politics on campaigns in the pro-life movement. I've also spent the last decade working on democracy issues. So I was at a foundation where I founded a religious pluralism portfolio. And then I was at an organization called Protect Democracy, where I was working on free and fair elections and just really nonpartisan work around our elections. And then a few months ago, I started at Interfaith America, doing different work on pluralism broadly with a focus on our civil society and democracy.
Chris, did you actually found Interfaith America?
No, we were founded about 25 years ago by Eboo Patel. Most of our history, we focused on interfaith cooperation and service on college campuses. But as we've grown, now we're really trying to grow our democracy work and our civil society work.
You know, I think a couple of years ago at a Catholic Charities meeting, I think I heard him speak.
I think that may be right. He loves talking to Catholic groups.
Right.
He's a Notre Dame graduate.
Okay.
And we have a close partnership called Team Up that Catholic Charities is one of our partners, as well as Habitat for Humanity and YMCA. So there's a lot of closeness with Catholic Charities.
So the next question is not exactly a trick question. Okay.
Uh-oh.
But how'd you like the Masters in Nonprofit Administration program at Mendoza?
I loved it. I never went to Catholic school until my master's program. So for one thing, it was great to be in a Catholic environment.
Right.
I also just thought it was great to be with mostly other Catholic leaders. But I found I got a lot of practical knowledge as well as being able to just enjoy the amazing environment at Notre Dame.
What about the curriculum? What'd you think of the curriculum?
I thought it was good. I also felt like it was a steal because a lot of the classes overlap with the much more expensive regular MBA. So getting the nonprofit MBA felt like a little bit of a hack.
Okay.
I'm worried about where this is going.
Well, no, I'll stop it here. No, now in terms of kind of the reveal, in the early part of the 2000s, probably 2005, 2006, I worked with the dean of the Mendoza School, Carolyn Wu.
Okay.
And worked with her and revised the curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we looked at it, it really was tremendously outdated. And so we really did a tremendous overhaul of the curriculum, which I hope they've continued to change, but it did need some work there. But interestingly, you talk about the economics and the finances, that it was a steal. The one recommendation that they didn't take, okay, was I said wherever there was a similar course for the MBA students, they shouldn't offer it in the MNA, that they should make the nonprofits do the rigor of the business school. I said, where there's not an overlap, do it. I lost that. So, and you benefited from the cost. So
yeah,
anyway,
I loved it. I really loved it. That was a special time.
Yeah. So anyway, give me a little bit of the work you're doing now, and you can begin wherever you want. So what are you working on these days?
Sure. So just an introduction for what our main focus is creating an interfaith America and a pluralistic society where everybody belongs. And our main framework for this is respect, relate, cooperate. And so it's respect for diverse identities, respecting people. You don't have to respect every idea. You don't have to agree on everything, but you should respect individuals. And then relate is about relating to people who have a different identity and learning from them and mutually learning together. And then the real focus that we have is on cooperate, which is we might have disagreements, we might have different identities, but we can find ways to learn about those disagreements and not bury them or pretend that we agree, but find the ways that we can serve the common good together. And so that's where most of our projects land, is focused on finding the way to bring people together across difference for the common good.
Can you give our listeners an example of something that you've done or something that has kind of done that or epitomizes it?
Sure. One example that I'd like to share is from our Team Up partnership with Catholic Charities and the other organizations I mentioned, because I think one thing I love about our bridge building work is that I think there's a notion sometimes that bridge building is a nice to have thing, or it's separate from the real work, or it's separate from the work of justice. But what we have found is that when you build bridges across difference and work together, the work is done in a better fashion. And so we did a site visit to Catholic Charities Omaha, where they have a tri-faith center that's one campus with a Christian church, a Muslim organization, and a synagogue. And Catholic Charities Omaha does work with them. And what was interesting to hear about is how many of the clients of the Market Choice Food Pantry in Omaha are Muslims. And so they have specific dietary needs. They have specific languages that they speak that Catholic Charities on its own might not be able to provide them exactly what they need, especially in the dignity-centered environment of a market right. choice pantry. So getting the input from the local Muslim organization made their service to the clients better. And the thing I love about some of the interactions is it also helps people to learn more about Catholics. The imam of the Muslim organization came from Egypt. And so his notion of Catholic charities was it's a charity to help Catholics. And right. so he was shocked to learn that Catholic Charities was helping everybody. And Denise, who runs Catholic Charities Omaha, had a great line where she said, "We don't serve just Catholics. We serve everyone because we are Catholic." And I thought that was a great encapsulation of the partnership.
We're speaking with Chris Crawford, who is at Interfaith America. He's the Senior Director of Civic Strategies. Does Interfaith America go beyond trying to bridge religious groups?
That's a great question. And yes, we look to bring people together across all sorts of differences. Religious is one of them, but our political divisions are deeper than our religious divisions. When we bring people together in our fellowships and mm-hmm. conversations on religious liberty, every conversation, public conversation or group conversation I've been a part of at Interfaith America, people say, "It's harder for me to talk across political differences within my own faith tradition than it is to talk to someone of another faith tradition about our differences." The political ones are more difficult right now. And I think
you're
there are
gonna,
other
divides. You're not
going to
get
well.
Any pushback from me on that. I think that's right on target. So can you speak to an example of where you've tried to do some of that political bridge building?
Yeah, one thing is around elections. We had what we called the Faith in Elections playbook last year that was really nonpartisan focused. And it was trying to help faith communities get involved in the election in very nonpartisan ways. And mm-hmm. things like recruiting poll workers, things like sharing accurate information on where and how to vote, trying to make sure there's enough polling locations, meeting with election officials to learn more and share accurate information about the election. And what's great about some of that work is that our elections are run by local people. Elections aren't run from Washington. They're run by regular people who get trained thoroughly to run the election. And they rely upon a network in some states by law. You have to have a certain balance of Republican and Democratic poll workers, for example. And so in order to make sure our elections run smoothly, faith communities are a great anchor organization to do some of that work, because they bring people together across those political differences around stuff that they can agree on. We all want mm-hmm. free and fair elections. So that, I think, is a powerful example from the last election, and we're continuing that work.
Chris, let me push back a little bit, okay? Let me push back on two things, okay? One, we now live in an environment, and I'll call out anybody, okay? But in which a number of people in Washington basically think when they don't win an election, it's the local election people who have cheated them. And so, like, you know, it's not enough to let the local be, the people outside of the local are picking on the local people. And the other thing is, I mean, I will say this, whether it is because I've sat on a redistricting mm-hmm. commission in New York City. There are a number of people who don't want a free and fair election. They want the deck stacked so that their ideology wins. And I say that if you're on the left or if you're on the right. So I guess I'm pushing back a little bit saying, I think the environment is so bad and we have a number of quote unquote, maybe good people, but who are acting badly. You can push back on what I say.
Yeah, I think some of what you're saying is right. And I think the design of a program like this and the work that is all of ours to do right. is to point out those of us who value free and fair elections vastly outnumber those who don't. And the important thing in building up the local community involvement is right. that a lot of people are lied to about our elections and right. how they're run. And I think people have this idea that it's a secretive process. So one thing that we try to do with recruiting poll workers is we go to bipartisan groups of communities across right. the political spectrum, because even if people don't sign up, going to them and saying, "We want you to be a part of this. right. you're invited to the table gives them some ownership over it and pushes back on some of the lies that they've heard. I also, so that's part of like building the support for our elections and increasing understanding. The thing that frustrates me sometimes is when religious leaders who get involved in politics prioritize their partisan beliefs and accommodate some of these lies or even push some of these lies, because I think as people of faith and especially leaders of faith, they have a fundamental obligation to the truth. And I think they need to be called out when they're spreading those lies.
I think you're right. And I guess, remember, I guess it was it Senator Moynihan or who said, or was it Tip O'Neill? I think it was Moynihan who said, everybody's entitled to their own opinion, but they're not entitled to their own facts.
Right.
Well, we can't agree these days on what a fact is and what an opinion is. So, like, we can't agree on the facts because, anyway, so anyway.
Right.
And I don't mean to be overly pessimistic.
No, I think you're diagnosing the problem well. Yeah. And I think it's especially hard. Like, Kerry Robinson talks about we are being divided. Like, there are forces trying to divide us more than we naturally would be. And when you can bring people, for example, we brought faith leaders to watch them test the election equipment.
Right.
If you've gone and looked and you've watched the process, you've seen it. No one can dispute that with you. And so getting people involved so they can be the trustworthy firsthand sources is really important. And we have to do it at a big scale. And an even bigger scale over time. But that's sort of how we're approaching it. Is I think a problem for the democracy field is that I think after the 2020 election, there was a sense that we were telling people stop asking questions, when I actually think we should be saying, get the actual answers to your questions. Too many people say have a question about election administration, but they don't call their election official. They don't actually look to say, oh, I heard this thing about our elections being rigged. They don't then look to check the process. And if they did, they would see all the safeguards in place, all the different ways that the two parties are set up to check each other's work, basically. So I want more people asking questions and more people involved. Because if you call your local election official and say, I don't trust you, I think you're full of it, most of them are going to say, come down here and volunteer. That's going to be their response.
I mean, I don't know if this is in the rest of the country, but I do think in New York, I think the way it works is like each of the major parties has a number of people who are there. So they kind of watch each other to make sure that there's not, I think they're actually called poll watchers.
Yes, that's right. And the laws are different state by state, but in every state, there's layers and layers of accountability, transparency, and all of that.
So given the negativity that I thrust on you, Where are you going? Where is Interfaith America going to kind of make even more of a difference? Or what are some of maybe the new projects that might be on the agenda that are incubating?
So some of it is we've got a big focus on the 250th anniversary of the founding of the country next July that we're going to be experiencing. Mm-hmm. And some of this is the storytelling. I think we need good stories about people getting along. But I also think a big piece of interfaith work and pluralism work is helping people understand that the true vision for pluralism, the best vision for pluralism and interfaith work, is that everybody gets to bring who they are to the table. I think there's an outdated notion that people still feel, especially religious conservatives, that you have to put aside your truth claims and in order to come to this common table. What we really need is people to bring exactly who they are. And so I love that I can come into an interfaith organization as a pro-life Catholic. I can go to the Eucharistic procession through Manhattan, and that scene is a nice thing to bring to the table. And I want, my goal over the next year is to help people see themselves as part of the movement to protect religious liberty, religious pluralism, and to build bridges across difference, because I think it does take all of us.
Yeah, I think that is a very, very, very strong point. You know, to build bridges, you don't have to give up your belief. I do think we, all of us, maybe have to give up some of our attitude and some of our phrasing of our beliefs.
Yes.
You know, I mean, I think one can stand up very clearly for life being begun at conception, life needing to be protected at all stages of life, without using some of the names that, you know, were used. And
absolutely.
And the people who think abortion should be legal, who think it should be there, some of the names that they use for to assume that that means that one is, you know, anti-feminist or anti-whatever is like whatever. But
mm-hmm.
But Chris, thank you so much. And thanks for the work you do. And I hope that you'll come back sometime on the show.
I would love to. Thank Great. You so much.
Christopher Crawford, Interfaith America, Building Bridges. The work is so critically, critically important. We'll take a break. We'll be back in just a moment on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Just do it. Just love. Just check out Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, who's here right now. Take it away, Monsignor.
Thank you for being with us on Just Love, and just do it. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just and more compassionate. Reflect upon elections and our part in making democracy stronger, and reflect upon veterans and what we do to make sure that they are well taken care of. Join us again next week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Listening to the Catholic Channel,
Sirius XM 129.